Hello, friends. This is Jim Cross, Chief Financial Officer of Village Missions, back with our fourth episode of Small Church and Ministry Finance Guide. We're discussing the fiduciary responsibility of the board and the elements of it. Fiduciary responsibility is a big phrase that simply describes the trust that board members are called to keep. As a board member, you can be exposed to personal liability, so it is important to be aware of the legal risks and responsibilities that your service entails, as well as the ways to minimize these risks. The main source of personal liability stems from a failure to exercise this trust that you are called to keep. There are three main duties that are most commonly mentioned under a state's nonprofit corporation law. In our last two episodes, we covered duty of care and duty of loyalty, and now we're going to talk about duty of obedience. Before we dive into duty of obedience, I want to remind you of a special offer from CPA and certified fraud examiner Tiffany Couch. Tiffany has developed a series of concise training videos for board members to help prevent fraud in your ministry. Tiffany takes you through some of the hard lessons learned by her clients. She teaches you how to read financial statements, how to read bank statements, and much more. The link is stopnonprofitfraud.com. Use the code CROSS20 to save $20 on your course. Stopnonprofitfraud.com is an excellent resource and totally worth it. I don't get anything for promoting it, but I have taken the course myself, and I believe that it is very effective. So use the code CROSS20 to save $20 on your course or follow the link in the show notes. Why is stopping nonprofit fraud a big deal? Well, a piece of news recently came to my attention that I found startling. Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary has a Center for the Study of Global Christianity, which produces all sorts of statistics regarding the state of the church worldwide. The center recently issued a report for 2019. Among the statistics they offer is an estimate of the amount that churches around the world lose to fraud. The estimate for 2019 is $68 billion. Sure, it's a big number, but that doesn't mean much until you compare it to other measurements to put it in context. The same report also estimated how much the church spends on global foreign missions. Friends, the church spends an estimated $60 billion on global foreign missions. So, more is lost to fraud than is spent on missions. It's stunning to think how much more effective we could be if we stopped fraud and utilized kingdom resources more effectively. That $68 billion is just what is reported. A lot of fraud goes unreported. So where do you find fraud? As Tiffany Couch says, it's on the face of your bank statement, and it's on the face of your credit card statements. 78% of fraud is committed through fraudulent disbursement. That is, paying for expenses that you shouldn't be paying for. If every board had members who looked at bank statements, credit card statements, and payroll journals every month, we could stop billions of dollars of fraud. That is why stopping nonprofit fraud is a big deal. Now, on to duty of obedience. The duty of obedience is twofold. First, it requires board members to be faithful to the ministry's mission. The basis for this rule lies in the public's trust that the ministry will manage donated funds to fulfill the ministry's mission. Second, the duty of obedience also requires that board members ensure that the ministry complies with all applicable federal, state, and local laws. Board members must be faithful to the ministry's mission, bylaws, policies, and procedures. It sets an example for ministry staff, and it bolsters the trust of donors and the public at large. So there are two tracks to give attention to under duty of obedience. We're going to cover the first in this episode and save the second for our next episode. The first duty is to the purpose or mission statement that is stated in our organizing charter or articles of incorporation. The mission can change based on the contemporary needs of culture you're working in or the population you're serving. Now, for those of you primarily involved in churches, this isn't necessarily going to relate to you because a church's purpose never changes, but a ministry's might. Hang around, you might pick up some tips. When the ministry is initially organized, you submit articles of incorporation to the state in which you are legally incorporated. Village Missions, for example, is organized in Oregon, and our articles of incorporation state, and I quote, "The purpose of this corporation is to propagate the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ in the United States of America. Its emphasis shall be upon those rural areas where there is no evangelical leadership. To further this end, it may encourage, assist, and motivate the formation of local churches and provide persons to serve as pastors, preachers, teachers, and spiritual leaders in such places, and upon request to any other existing church. It shall supervise, superintend, and direct the activities of such persons, and in cooperation with the local church, provide financial support and benefits for such persons. In furtherance of such purpose, this corporation shall engage in any lawful activity for which corporations may be organized under Chapter 61 of the Oregon Revised Statute, commonly known as the Oregon Nonprofit Corporation Law." End quote. That is a pretty comprehensive purpose statement. So everything that Village Missions does is held up to that original stated purpose. We are a gospel ministry, and our essential purpose, sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, does not change. But our strategies and methods can change. And the question is asked, is this new strategy or method in line with our purpose? Does it support or advance our purpose? That's the first filter. This is where the board puts up guardrails to keep us on the path to fulfilling our purpose. It's a question that is asked with some regularity. And I have to tell you, the genius of Village Missions founders and early leadership is that by the grace of God, they have kept us on track. Guided by the Holy Spirit, Village Missions only does one main thing. We do it really well, thanks be to God, but we're laser focused on one thing and not diffuse and distracted by competing priorities. In fact, we sometimes are confounded in our fundraising because we have a hard time coming up with that new thing that will excite donors. We don't do a lot of different things. We do one thing, but we're so grateful for our faithful donors because they are so wise. They know that the one thing we do is worth supporting. They love to support missionaries who faithfully plod along by the grace of God, sure and steady, preaching the word and loving the people. We do one thing well, and by the grace of God, it is enough. Now, sometimes tensions may arise, such as when a visionary leader wants the ministry to embark on a new project. Sometimes a funding opportunity arises, but it doesn't quite line up with what we're doing. New ideas are welcome, but prudent directors always evaluate these ideas through the filter of the ministry's purpose statement. Maybe there's another ministry that should take on the project instead, or maybe our purpose statement needs to be reevaluated. If your ministry board is led to believe that you need to embark in a new direction, you should revise your mission statement to fit your new activity. The revised mission statement needs to remain consistent with your tax-exempt purpose. The IRS defines tax-exempt purposes as the following. The exempt purposes set forth in Section 501(c)(3) are charitable, religious, educational, scientific, etc. The term charitable is used in its generally accepted legal sense and includes relief of the poor, the distressed, or the underprivileged, advancement of religion, advancement of education or science, erecting or maintaining public buildings, monuments, or works, lessening the burdens of government, lessening neighborhood tensions, eliminating prejudice and discrimination, defending human and civil rights secured by law, and combating community deterioration and juvenile delinquency. Just as an aside, take note that the IRS definition includes lessening the burdens of government. I find that interesting. It reminds me of the Salvation Army's tagline, doing the most good. It's thought-provoking because we know that Christian charity does so much more than government programs. Christian charity does it more efficiently. We recognize the intrinsic value of individual people. We help heal the souls of people, bringing eternal hope that's evidenced in life change. So the next time you hear someone talk about tax-exempt ministries being subsidized with tax dollars, which is a complete misnomer, you can let them know that we are doing more good for people than government could ever hope or afford to do. The reason that you're tax exempt is not because of some supposed legislative grace that the government has extended, but because you are doing good in your field of service according to your mission or purpose statement. But I digress. I will talk about that idea more in our next episode. So, if you are changing your purpose statement, you want to make sure that your new activity is still charitable, religious, educational, etc. I also want to mention at this point that if you are undertaking a revenue-enhancing activity, such as selling goods or services, you want to review the criteria for unrelated business activity. An activity undertaken for profit may be subject to unrelated business income tax if it meets three requirements. If it is a trade or business, if it is regularly carried on, and if it is not substantially related to furthering the exempt purpose of the organization. So the first point, trade or business, is easy to discern. Are you selling something? The second point, regularly carried on, excuses the occasional fundraiser, and that's also pretty easy to discern. That third point, substantially related, is where you may need to look closely. For example, if we are situated in a great location for a coffee shop, we may choose to open a coffee shop and all the profit that we make will go to support our ministry. If we run it like a business in every respect, then it's probably subject to unrelated business income tax. And that's okay. Just recognize it and pay your taxes. It's not going to impair your tax-exempt status. You're allowed to make a profit. Just pay your taxes. But how can we tweak what we're doing and make it related to our primary tax-exempt purpose? What if our ministry serves people who are developmentally challenged and they need to learn vocational skills? Could we employ them in our coffee shop and help them learn employable skills? Another example, I'm personally acquainted with a Bible college that teaches their students about self-sufficiency and the value of work as part of their curriculum. These students are involved in developing their own businesses and earning income to support themselves and give back to their community. Both of those examples can be substantially related to your tax-exempt purpose. If you're considering a profit-making venture, please seek guidance from an accountant or a lawyer who is knowledgeable in nonprofit matters. As you consider changing your mission statement, also consider how the change in mission statement might affect donations received by the ministry. Gifts received by the ministry must be used for the expressly declared purposes of the ministry when the gift was received. If the ministry's mission changes too much, you may need to tell your donors. If you've accepted gifts intended for a purpose that no longer exists, it's an opportunity to communicate with your donors and try to get them on board with your new purpose. You may also have to consider returning some gifts. Now, I don't think this will be an issue for the typical small ministry that runs month to month on the support of small donors. But if you are funded by grants, particularly government contracts, make sure you're communicating early and often. Hopefully, you've been communicating consistently all along, and everyone is on board with the change. Remember that the intent of the donor rules overall. Whatever the intent of the donor was when they gave that gift, that determines how the gift ought to be used. And while you may have disclaimers on your fundraising material that assert your discretion over the use of funds, none of that really matters if that is the last gift you ever get from that donor. So, be careful with your donors. This is another area where the guidance of a knowledgeable professional will probably come in handy. So, let's say you've decided to change the mission. You've ensured that the new mission statement remains consistent with the IRS tax-exempt description, and you have resolved issues with donations. If all that's checked off, your board of directors should formally approve the new mission statement. When you have your new mission statement, then your articles of incorporation should be amended so that the purpose statement is up to date, and that should be filed with the Secretary of the State in the state in which you are incorporated. Additionally, if you file a Form 990, you will want to make sure that the mission statement is updated when you file your annual return. Now, this is a great place to tell your story. Form 990 asks you to briefly describe your mission statement on the front, and then again, it asks for the same information on the top of page 2. But that's not enough room. Now, there's a Schedule O where you can add information. And whatever doesn't fit on the top of page 2 can overflow onto Schedule O. You've probably had a fascinating journey to your new mission statement. So go ahead, tell your story, and take as much space as you want. Form 990 is a marketing document, so make it work for you. So that's part 1 of Duty of Obedience. In our next episode, we'll talk about obedience as it relates to operating within the law. The laws regulating nonprofits are actually not that onerous, but there are a few easy ways to get sideways with the law, and we want to make sure that you don't fall into those traps. Did you know that our podcast is now available on Apple Podcasts? You can just say, "Hey Siri, play the podcast Small Church and Ministry Finance Guide." I'll look forward to meeting again wherever you hear your podcasts.